A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's follow-up to the masonry conversation. He wants to look at the rest of the material world now. Wood, where the workers are particular about everything. Steel, where most people just grab a standard bit and hope. And then the strange end of the spectrum. Ceramics, tile, and glass, which he admits he has no idea how anyone drills without shattering. His framing is to categorize drill bits by the material being drilled and see what that reveals.
And it reveals a lot, because a drill bit is really a cutting tool designed around the failure mode of its target material. Wood splits along grain lines, steel heats up and work hardens, ceramic and glass shatter. The bit is a response to the material's personality, and once you see that, the whole aisle at the hardware store starts to make sense.
The universal twist bit is the default everyone reaches for. But it's a compromise. It evacuates chips poorly in wood, it dulls fast in steel, and it grabs and cracks in tile. The specialized bits exist because the universal one is actually good at nothing in particular.
And the drill itself matters far less than people think. The drill is just a motor spinning the bit. The bit is the cutting tool. You can put a $50 bit in a cheap drill and get better results than a cheap bit in a $300 drill.
That's a claim worth pausing on, because it cuts against how most people shop. They'll spend hours researching the drill, comparing torque ratings and battery platforms, and then grab whatever set of bits is on sale at the checkout. But the drill is just the thing that spins. The bit is the thing that touches the material.
Right? The drill gives you speed and torque. The bit gives you the cut. If the bit is dull or the geometry is wrong for the material, no amount of drill quality will fix that. It's like putting a bad blade on a good table saw. The saw doesn't matter at that point.
So let's go from the forgiving material to the demanding one to the unforgiving ones. Wood first, because that's where the emotional stakes are highest.
Wood is funny because a standard twist bit will absolutely make a hole in wood. It just won't make a hole you'd want to show anyone. The spiral flutes on a twist bit were designed for metal, where chips are small and need to be evacuated continuously. In wood, those same flutes tear the fibers rather than slicing them, and when the bit breaks through the backside, it blows out a splintered mess.
And the emotional stakes, as you put it, are real because woodworkers are particular about everything. Daniel said that, and he's right. You spend hours planing and sanding a walnut board, and then you drill one hole with the wrong bit, and the back face looks like a dog chewed it. That's the moment people discover brad point bits.
The brad point bit is the answer. It has a sharp center spur that scores and centers before the cutting edges engage. The spur severs the wood fibers cleanly, and then the outer cutting edges slice the perimeter of the hole. You get a clean entry, a clean exit, and no tear out.
The center spur is doing two jobs at once. It's centering the bit so it doesn't wander, and it's pre-cutting the fibers so the main cutting edges aren't ripping them. That's the mechanism. It's not just about accuracy. It's about severing before cutting. A quarter-inch brad point through a walnut board leaves a hole you could almost polish. The same quarter-inch twist bit blows out the back face and leaves you reaching for sandpaper.
And the difference is even more dramatic in end grain. If you're drilling into the end of a board, the twist bit will wander immediately because there's nothing to center it. The brad point just sits there exactly where you put it and goes straight down. That's the centering function doing its job.
And then there's the spade bit, which is the speed option. Flat, cheap, fast in softwood. But it tears and splinters in hardwood, and it can wander off center if you're not careful. The design trade-off is pure speed over finish quality.
The spade bit is what you reach for when you're running electrical wire through studs, and you need a 3/4-inch hole in a 2x4 right now. The hole doesn't need to be pretty, it just needs to exist. If you tried to do that with a brad point, you'd be there all day.
And the auger bit is the depth option. It has a screw tip that pulls itself into the wood, so the operator doesn't have to push. The screw lead threads into the material and drags the cutting edges in behind it. That self-feeding action is what makes it ideal for deep, straight holes in thick stock. You can get auger bits in 12-inch and 18-inch lengths for timber work, and with a low-speed drill or a brace, they'll chew through a 6x6 post like it's butter.
The self-feeding action is worth emphasizing because it changes the relationship between the operator and the tool. With a twist bit, you're pushing. With an auger, the bit is pulling itself in and you're just hanging on. That matters when you're drilling a foot-deep hole through a timber. No one wants to lean on a drill for that long.
And the Forstner bit deserves a mention. It cuts flat-bottomed holes and doesn't follow a pilot hole, which makes it the choice for hinge mortises and precise cabinetry work. That's the bit for people who are particular about everything, as Daniel put it.
The Forstner is interesting because it's really a small circular saw with a center point. It has a rim that scores the perimeter, and the flat cutting edges shear the material inside that scored circle. Because it doesn't have a lead screw, it doesn't pull itself in, which means you control the depth precisely. That's why cabinet makers reach for it.
The flat-bottomed hole is the thing. A standard twist bit leaves a cone-shaped bottom because of the point angle. If you're mortising a hinge into a door, you need a flat bottom so the hinge sits flush. The Forstner gives you that. It's a very specific answer to a very specific problem.
There's also a real divide in the woodworking world between bits meant for a drill press and bits meant for a hand drill. A drill press bit might need a pilot hole to follow, while a hand drill bit self-centers. The brad point is the self-centering one, which is why it's the default for handheld work.
And the accessory ecosystem matters too. Brad points come in sets with hex shanks for quick change chucks, which is a convenience thing, but the geometry is what you're paying for. A good brad point set will have spurs that are actually sharp, and that's not always the case with the cheap ones. The sharpness of that spur is the difference between a clean hole and a tear out.
This is the part where the cheap set betrays you. The bits look the same in the package. They have the little center point and the side spurs. But the spurs are ground once and never sharpened, or they're coated in some gold paint that wears off on the first hole. You don't find out until you're halfway through a project and the back of your board looks like a crime scene.
So wood is about managing tear out and splintering. The bit is designed around the material's tendency to split along its grain. Steel is a completely different personality. It doesn't split. It fights back with heat.
And this is where the standard HSS bit actually has a legitimate claim to being the right tool. HSS stands for high-speed steel, and the twist bit spiral flute design was originally developed for metal drilling. So if you're drilling mild steel, a standard HSS bit with some cutting oil is fine. The problem starts when the steel gets harder, or when the friction generates enough heat to soften the bit.
HSS softens above roughly 600 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the threshold. Below it, the bit holds its edge. Above it, the bit anneals and dulls, and then you're just rubbing a blunt piece of metal against the work, generating more heat, and the whole thing spirals.
And the steel itself work hardens. As you drill, the surface of the hole gets compressed and hardened by the cutting action. If your bit dulls, and you keep pushing, your work hardening the steel further, which then destroys the cutting edge even faster. It's a feedback loop.
So, the cobalt bit is the answer for harder steels and stainless. Cobalt bits are typically 5-8% cobalt alloyed into the HSS, and the cobalt lets the bit maintain its hardness at higher temperatures. It's not that cobalt is sharper, it's that it stays sharp longer when the heat climbs.
That's the misconception to bust right there. Cobalt bits aren't just better HSS, they're a heat management solution. If you're drilling mild steel angle iron with oil, HSS is fine and cobalt is overkill. If you're drilling stainless steel, the HSS bit will dull in seconds and the cobalt bit will keep cutting. The material choice is about the thermal environment, not about some universal upgrade.
The stainless example is the one everyone runs into. They try to drill a hole in a stainless steel sink or a stainless exhaust pipe with a regular HSS bit, and within 5 seconds the bit is smoking and the steel is polished smooth where the bit was skating. Then they go buy a cobalt bit and it cuts like it's butter. The difference is entirely about heat resistance.
Then there's the step up from cobalt, which is carbide. Carbide is dramatically harder than HSS, but it's brittle. So you usually see carbide tip bits where a small carbide insert is brazed onto a steel body. The steel body provides the toughness, and the carbide tip provides the hardness.
Solid carbide bits exist too. but they're expensive, and they'll shatter if you drop them, or if the bit grabs. The brazed carbide tip is the practical compromise. You see these sold for hardened steel and cast iron, where HSS and even cobalt would just skate across the surface.
The brittleness of carbide is the trade-off. Hardness isn't the same as toughness. HSS is tough, it'll flex and survive abuse. Carbide is hard, it'll cut anything, but it's one bad drop away from being a paperweight. The brazed tip gives you the best of both.
The role of cutting fluid is worth explaining, because it's not just lubrication for its own sake. The fluid cools the cutting edge to keep the HSS from softening, and it flushes chips away so they don't re-weld to the hole wall. That rewelding is a real phenomenon called built-up edge, where steel chips friction weld themselves onto the cutting edge and the hole wall, and then your bit is cutting through its own debris.
Built-up edge is one of those things that sounds like a myth until you see it. You pull the bit out, and there's a little lump of steel stuck to the cutting edge. That lump is work-hardened material that welded itself on under pressure and heat. Cutting oil prevents it by keeping the temperature down and carrying the chips away.
The practical answer to Daniel's question about when you actually need the specialized bits is about the hardness of the steel and the heat generated. Mild steel, HSS with oil, slow speed, steady pressure. Stainless or hardened steel, cobalt or carbide, still slow speed, still steady pressure, but now you need the bit that won't anneal at the temperatures you're generating.
The slow speed part is counterintuitive for people coming from wood. In wood, you drill fast and the bit clears chips quickly. In steel, you drill slow and the bit cuts a continuous chip. High speed just generates heat. The bit is doing the work, not the speed.
Heat was the enemy with steel. But ceramic, tile, and glass have a different weakness entirely. They don't soften, they shatter. And that changes everything about how you approach them.
A standard twist bit on a glazed tile will grab, catch, and propagate a crack through the whole tile. The cutting edges bite into the glaze, the torque builds, and then the tile just splits. The solution is a carbide-tipped spearpoint bit, often just called a tile bit, that scrapes rather than cuts.
The spearpoint is the key geometry. Instead of sharp cutting edges that bite in, the carbide tip grinds and scrapes the material away at high speed with light pressure. You're not cutting the tile, you're braiding it. And the key technique is starting at an angle, or using a template to prevent the bit from skating across the glazed surface before it bites.
The skating is the thing that catches people. You put the bit on the tile, pull the trigger, and it just slides across the glaze because the surface is too smooth for the tip to engage. Starting at a 45-degree angle lets the edge of the tip catch and create a small divot, and then you gradually bring the drill up to perpendicular.
For larger holes, the diamond core hole saw is the tool. It's a hollow cylinder coated with diamond grit that grinds a circular groove into the tile. These need water cooling to prevent thermal shock to the tile. The friction generates heat, and if the tile gets too hot in one spot, it cracks.
A 2-inch diamond core saw through a porcelain tile for a shower faucet is the classic example. You set up a little dam of plumber's putty around the hole, fill it with water, and drill. The water keeps the diamond grit cool and carries away the ground-up tile dust. Without water, the bit overheats and the tile cracks.
The plumber's putty dam is one of those techniques that sounds made up until you do it. You build a little circular wall around where the hole goes, fill it with water, and the bit just runs submerged. The water turns to slurry as the tile dust mixes in, and that slurry keeps the bit cool. It's messy, but it works.
Glass is Daniel's skeptical one, and the skepticism is warranted. Glass is amorphous, no grain structure, so it doesn't cut, it fractures. But it can be drilled with a carbide spearpoint bit or a diamond-coated bit, running at slow speed with constant water lubrication and very light pressure.
The trick with glass isn't the bit, it's the technique. Start at a steep angle to create a shallow divot, then gradually lower to perpendicular. The divot prevents the bit from wandering, and the water prevents localized heating that would shatter the pane. You're grinding a hole through glass, not drilling one.
The crucial distinction is annealed versus tempered. Annealed glass is drillable. Tempered glass is not. Tempered glass is under internal stress, the surface is in compression, and the interior is in tension. And the moment you breach the surface, the whole pane releases that stress at once. It doesn't crack, it explodes into 1,000 little cubes.
That's why you can't drill a windshield. Windshields are laminated, but side windows and rear windows are tempered, and any attempt to drill one ends with the glass shattering into granules. The stress is baked in at the manufacturing stage, and there's no way to relieve it locally without releasing all of it.
The tempering process is fascinating from a materials perspective. The glass is heated until it's soft, then the surface is cooled rapidly with air jets. The surface contracts and hardens, and the interior is still hot and expanded. As the interior cools, it pulls the surface into compression. That's the stress you're releasing when you try to drill it.
The unifying insight across all three brittle materials is that you're not cutting, you're grinding. Carbide and diamond abrasives remove material in microscopic chips rather than slicing it, which is why they work where a sharp edge would cause catastrophic fracture.
That completes the arc. Wood is about clean cutting and managing fiber tear out. Steel is about heat management and thermal thresholds. Brittle materials are about fracture mechanics and abrasive grinding. The bit is always a response to the material's personality.
The escalation is mechanical to thermal to structural. Wood splits, steel heats, glass shatters. And the bits that work are the ones that respect those failure patterns.
A brad point respects wood's grain by severing it before cutting. A cobalt bit respects steel's heat by staying hard when the temperature climbs. A diamond core saw respects tile's brittleness by grinding instead of biting. The material tells you what it needs, and the bit is the answer.
You keep saying the brass tube method is older than the diamond bits. It's not older, it's just cheaper.
I don't think either of us mentioned a brass tube.
You were talking about grinding glass with diamond-coated bits and water. The brass tube with loose silicon carbide grit and turpentine does the same job. You spin the tube, the grit gets trapped between the tube and the glass, and it grinds a perfect hole with almost no pressure. I learned it from a man named Tom at a stained glass restoration studio in Brighton, summer of 92. I was terrible at it until he showed me the divot trick.
The divot trick being the same starting angle thing we were just describing.
Start the tube at a steep angle, get a little crescent going, then bring it up straight. The grit does the cutting. The brass is just the carrier. Tom said the technique was old when he learned it, and he'd been doing it since before the war.
The diamond-coated bits are the modern version of an abrasive grinding technique that's been around for decades, possibly centuries. The material science hasn't changed, only the convenience.
The grit is the cutting tool. Always was. Diamond is just harder grit that stays sharp longer. Silicon carbide works fine on glass, you just have to keep feeding it fresh because it breaks down.
That's a perfect illustration of the grinding principle we've been building toward. You're not cutting the glass with the brass tube. You're using the tube to press loose abrasive against the surface, and the abrasive does the work. It's the same mechanism as the diamond core saw, just with the abrasive loose instead of bonded to the carrier.
I tried to drill a tempered glass shelf once. Thought I could do it slow with the brass tube. The whole shelf went in my hands. Little cubes everywhere. Tom laughed for about 10 minutes and then told me why.
The internal stress. You can't relieve it locally. Breach the surface and the whole thing lets go.
I still have the brass tube in a drawer. Different sizes, actually. 1/4 inch, 3/8, 1/2 inch. Cut them from a brass rod with a hacksaw.
The loose grit technique is one most listeners will never have heard of. It's also the same principle as lapping and polishing, where you use a softer lap with abrasive compound to cut a harder material. The lap wears, but the abrasive does the work.
It makes you wonder about the universal twist bit. If every material demands a different geometry and a different material, what's the twist bit actually good at? It's a compromise that serves no material particularly well, but it's a reasonable default for the average homeowner who drills one hole in drywall and one in a soft pine board and calls it a day.
The twist bit is the jack of all trades and master of none. It'll make a hole in almost anything, and that's its virtue. The specialized bits exist for people who need the hole to be clean, or straight, or deep, or in a material that fights back.
That pattern would hold for plastic, too. Plastic doesn't split like wood, doesn't heat like steel, doesn't shatter like glass. It melts. So what would a bit designed for plastic look like?
Probably something with a sharper point angle and polished flutes to reduce friction. The melting is the failure pattern, so you design the bit to cut fast and evacuate chips quickly before they can weld themselves to the hole wall. Same framework, different personality.
That's the open question to leave with. The bit is a response to the material's failure pattern, and once you see that, you can look at any material and ask what it's afraid of.
The misconception to correct is that a standard HSS twist bit is fine for everything. It tears wood, overheats on hard steel, and shatters tile. The bit matters more than the drill, and the material matters more than either.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the brass tube story.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.